Are we ready?
Yeah.
Wait. I have one more good joke.
What's your one good joke?
Reading the manga is to watching the anime adaptation as listening to Vocaloid is to listening to the Hololive covers of Vocaloid.
Welcome to Soxcast, episode 181. How are y'all doing out there in internet land? We really hope you're staying warm, because good God.
Oh, my God.
I have hated existing at all over the last 7 to 10 days. I have not seen my thermometer go north of 19 degrees in like 10 days, and every night is like -5, -7, and my ass is up at 6:30 in the morning every morning. I have had to clear my windshield off every morning, and you know how angry that makes me every morning I have to get up and do it. I've been like, there is a roiling hatred for snow and cold weather in me at this time. It's way more potent than it's ever been. I've never been more goddamn angry about the weather than I am right now.
So fucking cold.
I am always warm, and last night I was like, holy fucking shit, it's cold. I'm dying. Because it was like 9.
Oh my God, yeah, and you're much further north than us, so
it's been rough this week.
It's sucked so bad, and like none of this snow's going anywhere because the temperatures aren't facilitating any kind of melting. So it's just, you look outside and it's white, and I hate it. I'm trying to slit my wrists to see a little color. It's that bad.
I have 30 minutes between all the bus commutes. I've got like 30 to 40 minutes of walking that I need to do just to get to and from work. This is a time of year to miss cars a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. I can handle most weather, but man, cold just shuts me down. Like my hands, as I get older, I've noticed my hands are just reacting worse and worse to the cold weather. Like I will go out and just feel my hand ball up on its own. Like I'm not even doing that. I'm just walking around with fists now, probably because I would want to just put my fist through the windshield at this point. Oh my God. But yeah, I hope everybody's safe out there. Hope you've had heat, hope you've had power, hope you've had internet. You got to have the internet. Who could live without the internet anymore, right?
Well, they're listening to us, so they have
exactly
to that.
That's
in some form or another.
I mean, they could be listening to it after, you know, they just went
trudging through the snow to the library to download the newest Soxcast.
There you go. I know somebody that lives in Detroit that had to go through like 2 weeks without power during an ice storm once, and oh my God, I can't imagine. I don't know how you wouldn't go crazy at this point, given how just kind of, I think, essential these, you know, yeah, electric and internet are kind of these days to kind of know anything. So, yeah, absolutely terrible. How's it been for y'all? Like, has it been, like, beyond the temperatures, did you get, like, dumped on really bad? Like,
I got a big dump of snow. It was, like, 22 inches or
Jesus
something.
Jesus Christ.
And, like, the roads are still really narrow.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's just so much.
Yeah, like what can you do with it? You just move it somewhere else. That's all you can do.
We might be getting a little more tomorrow.
Yeah, there's another storm rolling in this weekend further south, I think. So you might be okay.
We might be okay, but yeah, some people are going to get hit. I'm sorry.
With another 4 to 6 inches. Like, God, man.
It's not even February.
Rhett doesn't know anything about hitting things with 4 to 6 inches.
Absolutely not.
That's a penis joke.
Hey, there we go.
There you go.
That's not a weather griping.
There you go. That'll get the juices going. A good old dick joke will get the juices going.
You could hear the excitement in my voice. Like,
I could.
Just like hitching, like, oh shit, I got this.
You got it. Yeah, I love that. To my immediate virtual right, just like Castlevania, you might die if he whips it out. It's Rhett.
Well, you see, listening to the cover would be better because it's a real person doing it. Just like watching the anime is better because you have vocals and soundtrack and, you know, animation, not just gray images on a piece of paper.
It's all bourgeois excess that distracts from the real art. Real art just a guy sitting down, guy or gal sitting down, drawing a comic.
With being their, crunched to death with by Shonen and Jump deadlines.
With their eight assistants who do a whole bunch of extra work.
Someone taking in like 30 years like the Hunter Hunter guy.
producing a song on in whatever. I don't know. I forget the name of the software.
It's Vocaloid.
Whatever.
Vocaloid.
No, I know that. I was like, what's it called? A DAW. Producing.
Yeah, a digital audio workstation.
Stitching a whole song together in a DAW. You don't need a singer. You don't need instruments. Just honest creation.
Mm-hmm.
And you're over here. You need all this extra bells and whistles bullshit. It's just you're overspicing.
You need the human touch, AI boy.
There you go. I don't need...
What's the matter, anime adaptation boy? Afraid you might taste something.
To my immediate virtual left, pardon me, sir, but do you have any Grey Poujon?
What? Oh, that's food. Okay.
There you go. It's a.
That's me. Hi.
That's an old commercial. Maybe you're too young to remember it.
I'm baby.
You are baby. You're like, what, 35 now?
That's the first time you ever guessed an age that's older. I'm 32.
Oh, okay. I choose to not remember your age mostly because it infuriates me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, folks, we got a podcast to do. We got things to talk about. Lots of cool things, I'm sure. So, Rhett, hey, you seem really excited to talk about stuff.
I'm so excited to talk about things.
All right. That's what a podcast is for. You came to the right fucking place, my guy.
Well, so last time I watched My Hero Academia.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't expect something happened right after that, is that I got a little bored of anime. Not bored, but burnt out.
You feel like you maybe got burnt out.
My Hero Academia.
It was like 83 episodes or something in a row between like multiple seasons.
But he did this in like 2 weeks or less. Yeah,
and very fast, like nonstop.
Can see how that might be conducive to burning out.
And the four movies.
God.
So I got a little burnt out on anime for a bit.
Yeah?
But then I also didn't really play any games. I played a lot of Balatro.
Oh, yeah?
Which is like...
your journey with this is always funny. Most of the kids, this is why I don't play Balatro, because I see what it does to people.
I've stopped getting mad at it because I've learned more. I've watched some videos on it. I know what the good cards are. And it really is luck a lot of the time, where it's like sometimes a run just doesn't come together.
Mm-hmm.
Like you just don't have the math to make the mult that you need,
because
it's not like Isaac, where if you're just really good at the shoot 'em up part, you can push through no matter what.
Yeah.
Where in this, like, the math just screws you sometimes. So I don't really get mad, but there's times where I get really mad when it's like I've got a killer run, I'm throwing down like 10 million points, I've got an eternal all cards or face cards thing. And then the next boss is like, yeah, face cards do 0 points, you lose.
No.
Fuck you.
How many times have you uninstalled the game and said, fuck this, never again?
Like 20.
Didn't you hide it in your library once?
And right now it is still technically a hidden game.
It's still
game,
hidden?
So I have to open the folder every time.
All right.
The face card run, though, where I was like, if I lose this one, because I'm getting like 10 million points, which is like far more than you need to actually, you know, clear anti-8.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, if I lose this run, I'm actually going to click the Steam button for remove from account.
Jesus Christ.
And then I did lose, and I was like, oh, I'm not really going to throw away money like that, but fuck, I'm not playing this for a week, and I really didn't. But now
what a time delay where this really just grabbed you like a year, 2 years later.
Well, I played a lot when I got it, which was December 2024, and then played like 50 hours and then took a year off and then needed a very head empty game 1 year later.
That's so much, Rhett.
I mean, yeah, that one became like
three runs on my phone and then haven't touched it again.
I mean, sometimes the roguelike grabs you. Hey, this one's very popular. I still message Sayara about it because he's still playing it, I think.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it grabs you. I have that and Dicey Dungeons on my phone, and both of them are like, oh, if I was gonna, it'd be one of you. But
yeah. So back to anime, though. I burnt out pretty hard, and then I was like, oh, but there is one more show I want to watch. So I watched season 2 of Umo Musume Cinderella Gray.
Yes, you did!
It's... I don't know what else to say about it other than it fucking rules. It's just, hey, it's more of, you know, what you like. Horse girls running. And there's a whole lot of Tamamo Cross in this one, and she's the best.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is her story arc.
Oh, yeah. And it's real good, too. Yeah. I think that this is, like, this has to be the hypest 10 episodes of anime I've seen in a really long time. Like, I don't know how they keep doing it. Because at its core, it's literally just, it's fucking NASCAR, dude. They're just going in a circle. That's it. It all comes down to that literal last spurt.
Yeah.
And then they make 80 minutes of that. They make that, like, 80 minutes of this show is literally the last spurt of all the big races, basically. Oh, yeah. And they stretch that out and make that take forever, and it works.
It is funny how many seasons of the show there are now when you combine all of it, and how similar they are, but then, like, you start to see, like, different nuances in it. Like, I feel like the races in this show are longer than the other ones.
Yeah, for sure. They spend a lot more time...
Like, season 2 stuff would always wrap up in one episode, usually.
Yeah.
Where in this one, it's like, the big races are, like, 2 episodes easy.
Mm-hmm.
When you include, like, you know, the pre-race banter, like, okay, we're here, and we're going to race, and then, like, about halfway through, the race starts, and then it's, like, 3 segments of, yep, they're still running in that circle. And then, like, end of episode, oh, it's the last spurt, we're going to activate our fucking super meters. The fucking auras they do in this one are so funny.
Oh, God, they're nuts. Yeah.
This is funny. I remember at the end of season 1 when they first did like, the glass cracking animation.
Yeah.
I thought, having seen season 2, they're signaling something very different there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not breaking through. It's breaking your leg.
You're breaking your goddamn leg, yeah.
But yeah, you start to realize in the season, oh, that's like, you know.
That's them breaking through their own barriers, basically.
Yeah, it's them reaching 110%.
Yeah.
But then when multiple characters are doing that and they have the auras around themselves,
mm-hmm.
it's very funny.
It's.
Yeah.
I think that, like, it would be easy to criticize it for maybe being overdone. Like, because I could think you can lose. If you do it too much, you can lose that, how special it feels when a character finally kind of breaks through the things that are holding. Because that's really what the glass breaking is. Mm-hmm. Is like, these are the things that are holding you back from reaching your true potential. And that, like, it's a really cool story moment, along with just being a really hype visual. And they could really just keep doing that way too much. And that's sort of my worry going forward, because I noticed they started doing that, like, with a lot of characters at the end of this one. And it's just like, and they're doing it, you know, after they've had their big revelations. So I can see.
It does seem like it's going to be more of a rotating cast where there's going to be new characters next season that they're already hinting at.
Yeah, like Aguri Cap definitely takes up, like, the first core, and then Tamamo Cross gets the second. I think with Cinderella Gray, though, there's just... I think that there is a refinement in tone with between it and the preceding 3 seasons. I think that like, the first 3 seasons are just very bright, colorful. There's a playfulness to it that feels dialed back in Cinderella Gray, I think. And I think that probably started with the movie, really, where they started kind of finding that different tone, but Cinderella Gray, I think, is just such a different texture from the rest of the series, and in some ways, I think I kind of prefer it.
I mean, I really like the movie.
The movie's super good. The movie's incredible. But yeah, like, I think in 10 episodes, they're able, like, it's not just, like, high octane all the time either, so it's not just, like, being loud for the entire 10 episodes. Mm-hmm. It's just, they've kind of found their writing chops in a way where they're really good at piecing these stories together, getting the character growth moments in there, making you get invested, and then being able to also have these big all-out races that just light up the screen. You get invested. You are just so damn hyped for it the whole time. Yeah. And I think that this is maybe the best they've done, despite how much I really like season two and the movie. I think that these 23 episodes together may kind of be like their best work.
I can definitely see that. I'd have to revisit season two at some point.
Yeah.
But like, I think it's just kind of amazing that there are all these different high points, because Road to the Top is also really good.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you have all these different perspectives and takes on girls running in a circle.
It's they very fully explore mm-hmm. what it means to be a competitor and yeah. how you yourself come to define it, mm-hmm. how you use that to overcome the challenges in your own life beyond, you know, the racing thing. Because ultimately, that's what a lot of characters are dealing with. They're dealing with issues that aren't specifically tied to racing. But racing is sort of the outlet for which they are able to sort those things out and become better people.
Yeah. You're much better at talking about the series than I am.
I've got a lot of time with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the difference in tone also comes from this one being originally based on a manga
mm-hmm.
and like having, you know, one author's voice that's different from all the other entries in the franchise.
That manga looks incredible, by the way. Like, if you've not, like, just looked at some of the hype moments in the anime, like, go look those up in the manga. They, like, dude, it's some of the, like, just, it's some of the best and most hype art I've seen in a manga. It's yeah. just so over-the-top, shonen, bullshitty, but it works really, really well.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's the other thing I meant to think about is, like, having watched this immediately after yeah. My Hero Academia, I really did see more how this is, like, the shonen take on Uma Musume.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, just the pacing and the way they build up these races and the way the races last significantly longer than the other ones. It's like, yeah. these are, you know, it's shonen paced. Like,
yeah, it is.
Also, going from 13 episodes battles in My Hero Academia to 2-episode races, it still felt like I was like, what if they tried to do like a 10-episode race?
I don't know how you do that.
Yeah, you really couldn't. I realized I was being silly then.
That's a bit silly. I think you could get 3 at most if you really fucking stretch it, but mm-hmm. anything beyond that would just be yeah. absurd.
They definitely push some absurdity in this anyways. I love the way they visualize hills in this when it's like it's a very shallow incline, but they will make it look like 45 degrees.
It's yeah, real
that makes sense about the art in the manga being really bold and over the top.
Because yeah.
You don't have the actual animation, so you've got to make that one frame mm-hmm. count mm-hmm. as hard as you can. That's probably why it looks a little weird in the anime when they have multiple auras going off, is because in the manga it was just a 2-page splash, probably.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that show is really good. That franchise that franchise got laughed at so fucking much when I first brought it
up. Yeah, I remember. Now,
the game sweeps the internet by storm. The animes, except for season 3, like, they've been on fire lately.
Like, the movie is going to be in theaters at the end of February here.
Maybe I should.
I'm going to try and find a place. I'm going to do it because I want to see that shit on a big screen.
Yeah, it does sound pretty good, huh? What a crazy franchise.
It is. Everything about Uma Musume is just like, you make no sense. How is this happening?
Yeah. So I watched one other anime,
mm-hmm.
kind of have been pecking away at this one for a very long time.
So you're taking a break from anime, and you watched Uma Musume, and yeah. another anime.
And another anime.
Rhett, you are not very good at saying, all right, I'm checked out, I'm not doing this. You are not very good at this, are you?
Oh my god, I just googled the name of the show that I watched and was like, what's this entire film genre? I'm looking for the anime called noir.
Mm. That's very funny. That was 2001. Yeah. Yeah. I watched that way back in the day. That was back before I had my first, okay, I'm done with anime for a while, before Elfin Lied pulled me back in.
A whole 4 years later.
Well, yeah.
So this is a 2001 show. It is animated in widescreen for some reason.
Yeah, it's one of the first shows I remember being widescreen.
Even though I don't even think widescreen TVs existed at that point.
I'm sure they did, but like, it was CRTs. Not the norm. It was not the norm at the time.
Yeah, I'm sure they were very expensive. Like, the transition to, you know, flat panel stuff
right.
had not happened for yeah. sure. But it's, so, like, it looks really good now. Like, I don't know if it's upscaling or just, like, rescanning, but compared to a lot of shows from that era that are very, you know, digitally painted, ooh. Like, oh, this one's got them real hand-drawn backgrounds.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And it fills my whole monitor now. Oh, yeah, this is really good. It's a very... I had been watching some of Gintama, mm-hmm. which is like a 2006 to 2008 show, 200 episodes in 4:3.
Oh, God, yeah.
So it was the last show still airing in 4:3, or mm-hmm. the last anime. So, like, jumping from one... from that being more recent to this being in widescreen was really funny, even though it's 7 years older. Mm. This is so the reason I've always wanted to watch this show is because of the soundtrack.
Oh God,
yeah. It is a very early Yuki Kaidra mm-hmm. soundtrack. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's actually her first one, but it was, you know, very early. Also the opening song is by Ali Project.
Oh yeah, Ali Project is yeah they do the OP.
It definitely sets an era for this show.
Yeah, yeah.
You said something, John, I didn't hear.
I said, you have my attention.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this was before all the Fate stuff.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So I've listened to the soundtrack.
And Xenosaga. Like, I have a variety of
yeah.
Kajira.
I think I first heard her in My Hime, which is even a few years after this, like 2004, maybe. So I've listened to the soundtrack a lot. It's really good. It was very interesting watching the show. Being like, oh, it's those songs I've listened to over 20 years ago. But I think the show itself, it's very slow and very dry.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot happens.
It's very good looking.
Like, it is a show about two girls with guns, and there's no blood.
Yeah.
It is 20 years prior Licker's Recoil.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I think there's a little blood in that. There's none in this.
Mm-hmm.
The one moment that killed me, though, is like on the soundtrack, disc two, there's like a big 6 minute vocal song at the end. And I always envisioned it as this being like this show's version of the ending of Cowboy Bebop, where right. they play, you know, the very long song at the end and you cry.
Mm-hmm.
So finally watching the actual show and they play that song one time and it's like four episodes from the end. In a random scene where one of the girls is walking around the city and, like, nothing is happening.
Yeah. Boy, that's... talk about a letdown.
And then it gets cut off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the whole thing doesn't even play out. And I'm just, like, staring at the screen like...
You wasted it on that?
Like, as soon as that song started playing, I, like, you know... lean forward and see, like, oh, this is the big moment. This is the big moment. And then nothing happens.
That's like if an end of Evangelion Shinji's just listening to Kamsutsu Todd on his tape player and then cuts it off. And it yeah. never gets used.
But if you've heard that song for 20 years,
you've already built it up in your head.
Yeah.
God, that's funny.
There's one song, like another like 6 minute instrumental track that they time a lot of scenes around, which is interesting. They do use that one fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
But then sometimes when they time scenes around the music, there will be parts where just nothing happens for like 30 seconds because they're just holding on shot for way too long. But
are you guys saving some budget here? I think I see some budget saving.
I don't even know if it's budget saving. I think this is just what a lot of shows from 2001 looked like.
Mm-hmm.
Like anime definitely has blown up recently, like the gap between like MAPPA stuff and isekais are dramatic.
Mm.
Yeah, this was an interesting show. It's weird. I was listening to the soundtrack again just before this and having way more like memories and nostalgia of that versus the show I literally just watched.
Yeah, I know, because we've literally not talked about the show or what it's about at all. We're just talking about the soundtrack.
It's such an important part of the show. It's like the legacy of the show, honestly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, about
sometimes
the show.
Sometimes shows are vibes more than anything.
This is so much a vibe show because like nothing happens in like episode one. It's like girl meets girl and they fire pistols at each other over 20 minutes.
Which
it's
vibes. Hot. That's hot.
Yeah. But it's like I've watched shows from the 70s and I was like, this is pretty slow paced even in comparison to those.
Oof.
That's so funny.
So story wise, I will just say one thing. There's two girls. They're an assassination unit named Noir. And then partway through, a third girl shows up and says, I'm the real Noir. And she has purple hair and she stabs people. So you can guess who my favorite one is.
All right.
Was.
Yeah. I'm on board.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
Give a girl a knife, purple hair, literally the woman of my dreams.
Yes.
Give a girl a knife and you feed her for a day. Teach her to use a knife and you kill people for the rest of her life.
So that's what I've been up to. Oh, I played Trails Beyond, but I'm very early in it because that is a very long and slow game, apparently.
you finished the prologue, right? You finished chapter one?
No, there's the prologue and chapter one. I finished chapter one after 20 hours.
So you can finish like one full RPG.
You can finish Undertale four times.
Oh, God. Yeah, I've done both routes in Undertale. got a whole Chrono Trigger worth of... There's so many characters in these games, man. The prologue in chapter one is just a nonstop barrage of reintroducing all these characters from the Daybreak games, from Cold Steel, from miscellaneous places. I'm just like, it's a little exhausting. Maybe have these characters show up when they're relevant.
Right.
Just all these characters meeting each other and kind of glazing each other.
God. So like, funny. I think that you kind of got to get used to that when you've got a cast at this point that is this fucking big. You know, everybody's going to show up, have their moment. Their nameplate's going to come up. The camera's going to pan dramatically up them while they're standing there.
Oh, God, Polly. You haven't even played it, and you're just describing it so perfectly. It's just that for, like, 15 hours. And they're just, it's not even like dramatic moments. They're just hanging out in the city. That's what's killing me.
Oh, so it's not the Kiseki means miracle moments. It's
no, it's just, oh, we invited some friends over from, you know, Liberal. It's, hey, it's Kevin. Kevin's back. Slow pan up. And he, you know, he's talking to Reen Schwarzer.
Oh,
and he's talking to Van from the other Daybreak games. They're just like all on super.
Oh
good
my god! Good. And they're all standing in a circle and vigorously masturbating. Oh, they're coming on my face. Oh, this is great.
No,
I love Trails.
But it sounds it sounds like it's still treating you well, though. I mean, it sounds very much like really not having a good time, or is it just because we're at the slow start point?
There's definitely. Once I have gotten a little bit further in, it's like, okay, it's picking up. But it is very much Daybreak 3, but not in the way that Cold Steel 3 was Cold Steel 3. Because, like, Cold Steel 1 and 2 are, like, a complete story arc, and you didn't necessarily think that the next game was going to be Cold Steel 3.
Right.
And then they do, like, a 3-year time skip. You know, everybody's older. All the areas you go to are different. Everybody's, you know... They introduce new characters right away at the start, like the new class.
The new class 7, yeah.
This is very much, it's the third game in this sub-franchise, the Daybreak games.
Yeah.
And, like, it feels exactly like the first two.
Okay.
And as I've talked about on the podcast, those were kind of my two least favorite ones
right.
so far.
Okay.
Yeah, you feel like the budget being stretched, like, a little thin again because, hey... We're still in those same locations and stuff from previous games. Mm. And now it's just, oh, everybody's here. Every character is here.
And we're in the factory.
God. That's Neptunia.
That's Neptunia. Yeah.
I know.
They should get in touch with Idea Factory.
God. Idea Factory. How are they still alive?
Man, I don't know. I don't even like everything they put out now. I look at it. It's like, I don't know. I got no interest. Like, and then Neptunia is just done.
Neptunia. Ever since Super Neptunia RPG, I think.
Like, I think that was really a nail, man. So. That was a nail in the coffin.
After Mega Nep, I just couldn't anymore.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Another thing about Trails is that. They keep doing the whole, like, VR dungeon grindy thing. And I think they do that because the setting is so modern now, it's hard for them to justify...
Let's go to a castle!
Yeah, it's hard for them to justify dungeons. Like,
yeah.
So they have to have something so that there's some gameplay, so that it's not just straight 20 hours of characters talking.
Yeah, because the world has advanced... Like, the world in this game has advanced to the point of, we have an orbital internet.
We have cars. Van just drives everywhere.
Yeah.
So don't need to walk around Liberal anymore.
Mm. Yeah, like you walked around in the other games. I mean, I guess in Cold Steel you actually take a train, but like there is progression, but it's just like, oh, there's just not really reasons for dungeons anymore. So they keep doing, oh, it's a VR dungeon and time doesn't pass in the real world while we're here, which is just like, it's so contrived. And they've done it 3 out of the last 4 games, because it was in Reverie, it was in Daybreak 2, and now it's in Daybreak 3. And it's just like, okay, because it's kind of this whole setup of Trails Third, where it's like, hey, this is just, you know, grindy dungeon fun.
Yeah.
But in that one, they made it the whole game. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I didn't have a lot to talk about this time.
This was the one that's subtitled Goodbye, Oza Maria.
Oh, actually, it is. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm kind of still expecting that.
I'm sure the story is going to come back.
Where you're going to come back and just be like, oh, my God.
I'm sure story-wise it's going to get there because the trailer is fucking crazy. I'm just trying to not even remember what happened. I do know that this one ends on a big cliffhanger, and they are bastards because they have not paid it off. They made 2 fucking remakes in the interim.
Mm.
I didn't expect the game that had Goodbye in the subtitle to end on a cliffhanger.
It's very much Cold Steel 3 into unannounced Cold Steel 4.
Yeah.
Which at this point, is that going to be the last game? I've heard Falcom's not doing so great right now.
Mm.
Like, that the remakes were kind of a, please, we need money.
Please give us money, yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know.
That Tokyo Xanadu sequel just gets further and further away, I think.
I'm just worried, could you fucking imagine if they went under before Trails finishes?
God, I would have to hope somebody wouldn't let that happen. You would have to hope for a Christmas miracle. Some sugar daddy's like, no, we'll help you fund it.
It's me, the Saudi prince.
Oh no!
There's a way that goes.
There's
so
the
badly.
Monkey paw. There's a monkey paw situation if you ever fucking saw one. Jesus Christ.
God, there's a character in Daybreak that is kind of Saudi prince.
Oh no! Adjacent,
except for, you know, the whole human rights massacres and violations. Yeah, I didn't have much to talk about this time. So I think we said John next.
Yeah, that's me. John. That's you.
That's me. That's me.
That's you, little buddy. It's you. I'm ruffling your hair. It's like,
oh yay, oh yay. I talked about Birdcage last time.
Mm-hmm.
I went back and relearned Gradius. That was really satisfying.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what? I sat down like, I'm just going to like relearn this game, and it's going to be a snap. It's going to be like
one
4-hour evening. I'm going to get this game down. And then it was three full days.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Gradius still got hands. You think Gradius just because... That is a game that I feel the same way about, because I had kind of gone back to it over the years too, through various collections or whatever. And like, oh yeah, I'll play Gradius again. Oh, whoa, don't remember it being this hard. They must have patched it.
Oh, this got hands though.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really funny, almost the same thing. The first time I cleared it, the first time I got past stage 4, I won. And this time, I got past stage 4 3 times and died on stage 7 twice and then won the third time. Like, stage 5 and 6 are just free.
Mm-hmm.
And then stage 7 isn't too bad. Stage 7's not too bad.
No.
You just buckle down and learn stage 7. It's not too bad. But I just kept dying at stage 3 and 4 over and over. Just over and over
that's
and over.
Usually how learning all shmups goes for me, actually, is that... I somehow end up dialing in like the last two or three stages or whatever. Mm-hmm. But when I'm going for a 1cc, I will always fuck it up. I'm like, oh, here's a weird death on stage two that you never saw coming, or stage three, or just, yeah. Like, that's how it always happens for me. Like, I usually never stall out on 1ccs at the end. It's just like, oh, why did I die there?
What the hell?
Which one is the one with the Moais?
That's all of them.
Which stage?
Oh, that's stage three.
That's stage three.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. They'll give you a hard time. I got a clean route down, but it's still just it's a hard time.
The Cheerios can still get you, because they get those things just flood the screen, and you're just kind of you've got to pick your moment and saw your way through at some point.
Mm-hmm. And it felt really good going back to that after Gradius Galaxies, because it's like, oh, here's the 15-minute blast of arcade Gradius. This feels real nice. Mm-hmm. So that was nice to return to. I started picking up the Odonpachi. I've kept pecking at it because that was the first cave game I played ages ago, and I feel like I'm probably close, but I haven't had like the dial in, this is all I'm playing, I'm going to finish learning this, that I get sometimes. I think it's just because I played like three or four shmups in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So I still I want to get that, close that book after, 15 years. And I feel like that's going to open me up to finally learn Espera Day, which I'm really jazzed about. That game's so pretty. And it's going to have such a cool final boss. I haven't looked it up, so I'm not like, Escalud is like the coolest shit in the world.
Yeah.
And then Espera Day is like, well, this one's really cool though. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited. But yeah, I think I'm just going to peck at a handful of little things, cause I don't have any real big arc here. It's been just kind of a hell of a month.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of been the thing, is just despite I say that, but I've had like probably the best media month of anybody here. So, but yeah, awesome. Been a real busy month.
Yeah. No, for me, it was just like a lot of things. And then like, I started a lot of things without finishing anything, just cause my brain is in a million places.
Yeah.
We did put out, the new Vextra release. Mm-hmm. And that's fun because everybody finished theirs like in January.
Oh, nice.
So I got to play all of them. If you just go to vextro.itch.io, it's Vextro Unplugged. We just got four entries this time, nice and punchy. And I really liked how everyone's turned out. Nilsson turned in a really great like 10-minute walk around poem game. Sunday did a zine that's themed around RPG Maker 2000 assets, and Los Angeles local food cuisine.
All right. I'm digging it.
And then Wuzzy wrote a 12K word short story that is a spiral into a sci-fi spiral into psychosis, and also pretty gay.
Okay.
I quite enjoyed it. And I wrote a short story collection. It's pulled from my flash fiction over the last like 2 years. I mostly pulled it together in the middle of last year, so I've been sitting on it and excited to share it. And a bunch of friends really liked it. It's 8 like mostly 1,000-ish word stories.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really pleased with how it came together. So I think we did the Unplugged theming pretty nicely, even if it didn't pull in as many Vextro peeps. I played Chris's VN, A Fairy's Tale, Death's Promise.
This motherfucker's like, oh, here's my first VN, and it turns out to be this freaking good and this freaking looking this amazing and just being so fucking being a work of absolute genius. I'm just gonna literally go up to Chris at some point, smack him in the face.
God in heaven. It's just real good. Yeah, I really love the framing story and how it contextualizes everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then the actual fairy tale is really, really strong.
Real strong command of that writing style, by the way. That like I was 100% convinced. Like that was really, really well done.
Mm-hmm. God in heaven. There's a verisimilitude to it that comes from the framing. That's really fun. It's a really good effect.
Yep.
It's just like a 45-minute game. It's if you just like a good good kinetic VN. Mm-hmm. I quite enjoyed this one. I think this is a really strong follow-up to Excise in terms of like, all right, now let's drill down on like story, voice, on writing.
Yeah.
And I can't wait for Chris to make more stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
This has been a joy. And all right, I've got three things that I started and I'm in the middle of. like a job.
Media Zero is dead.
Media Zero is not even close.
End of an era.
I started the year on Media Zero, but it's been dead all month. But I'm going to start with one I feel really warm about. I'm playing Jailbird Nocturne by Sox friend Alexandra H. Mm-hmm. I'm about halfway through it. I don't know why I didn't just chew through it, but I've just been kind of pecking at it. Again, it's just hell month. But this is like an 8-ish hour RPG Maker game with all unique hand-drawn assets and music. It is one of the kind of rare RPG Maker games that is just like built from the ground up by one person. And let me open up the page just to make sure I'm not talking on my ass. fully original art, sound, and music. That's crazy to me.
Yeah.
The animations, it's got such a look. It makes me so happy. I think it's not like Undertale exactly. It's just more like, it hits me in that sense where this is a very personal vision. Mm-hmm. And that makes me really happy. I love cute little sprites and cute drawings and, one pixel wide black outlines around
art.
Just like, it feels like a classic Windows freeware game mm-hmm. type deal. And it's just been a joy. The writing, there's a strong command to the, there's lots of good jokes. Jokes make the games like this hit so much better mm-hmm. where you actually, there's so many good gags, like moving from dungeon to dungeon, level to level. It's all fixed encounters. There's a lot of care into making each of the, encounters unique by having like, varied enemies that require you to attack them in different ways. Mm-hmm. Every enemy has a unique scan flavor text.
Mm.
Those are always good.
Always love that.
And then because of how the system's designed, the enemy encounters fit together differently depending on putting together five of this monster with one of this monster is a very different effect from two of this monster with three of these monster.
Right. Yeah.
So it's just a nice, good RPG Maker thing. I'm really excited to see it through to the end. It doesn't overdo it. It has just enough systems crunch without overdoing it. It's not too hard, not too easy. It mm-hmm. keeps me on my toes. I'm having a really nice time. It's also the sequel to a 2-hour game I missed. I didn't play. I wanted to jump into this one. This one needs some love. Mm-hmm. So Jailbird Nocturne. That's on Alex's itch page. That's on the Sox game dev.
Yeah.
What's it called? SoxMakePeopleSexy.net. We have a page.
Yeah, we got a game dev page. It's there.
Yeah. So having a really warm time with that. I started Shizuku, the 1996 Leaf VN.
All right, yeah.
I read like an hour, 2 hours. I want to play more. I thought about just kind of letting that one go, but no. So I saw some smart asses. Because someone was like, oh, it's the first VN, Shizuku. And then some people in the chat went, well, actually, Chunsoft's sound novels, Otogurisō mm-hmm. and Kamatachi no Yoru, came first. And they're basically the same thing as Shizuku. Shizuku is actually marketed, many of the visual novels are marketed as sound novels. It's basically the same thing, and you're giving credit to Shizuku. Bitch.
There you go, breaking out the hard B.
I've played Kamaitachi no Yoru. I played it when it was translated for phones.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a fucking difference playing a sound novel that is a very standard feeling murder mystery and has no character art. It's all outlines of drawings, and it has like a bog standard kind of blank slate protagonist. Right. And then playing Shizuku, where you play as a shithead boy who sucks.
John's favorite.
The first thing he does is he's just sitting in the classroom hating everybody and just wishing all of his classmates would get blown up by a nuke. He's just like,
I kind of like this guy actually
killing everybody. He's just he's fascinated with the idea of losing his mind. Just pure strange school shooter energy. and it's fantastic immediately. And there's a bunch of cute girl designs. And also a lot of like weird psychology to how those are presented. The opening to this is great. Mm. Probably the opening. I don't know how this is going to pay off at all, mm-hmm. but I know that the opening to this is like pure strain, like polycore.
Oh man. You got me interested now.
There's a spectrum from Chunsoft to Tsukihime and Higurashi.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Which is like, those are like inarguably like visual novels, mm-hmm. like as we know them. And Shizuku is way closer to that.
Oh, like
this is the stuff that Tsukihime and Igarashi
were pulling from.
Much it feels much closer to that than the Chunsoft games I've played.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for more. The translation seems really solid. It's kind of annoying. It took me a little bit to get together, but so, you know, you can badger me if you want help.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to read more of that. And yeah, one more just because we're in full just kind of
wallowing in all of your media.
There's not, sometimes you don't have a narrative going into an episode.
No.
It's a no arc arc.
Sometimes I have to write the episode description and just say, and John has a bunch of stuff to talk about.
John, Rhett have a bunch of random shit. Okay, we're not machines. We don't control how the shit comes together. Okay, sometimes we just start a bunch of games and don't finish them.
That's okay.
Oh my god, my urge to start new games is so fucking high, and I'm just like, you can't.
You got trails, Rhett. And now when I'm actually probably finishing this weekend is that I started Breath of Fire.
Oh my god.
Which is stupid because I was already playing an RPG.
What are you doing?
But I was like, I was sad and I was like, I know what'll fix me. Let's light a candle. Let's pour a glass of wine. Let's start a Super Nintendo RPG.
Mm-hmm. You got to play all of them, so you might as well get another one out of the way.
I gotta play every single RPG at some point. because Super Nintendo RPGs, I don't know if y'all know this, they are the best kind of RPG.
They're pretty good. Got a pretty good pedigree there, I think. I don't think you'll find, maybe a bit of a hot take from you, but I'll jump on the wagon with you, sure.
Yeah. At least, certainly better than, look, I'm going to leave room for me to be a different kind of snob in the future.
Mm-hmm. Which is always
certainly
important.
Better than any later variety of console RPG as an overall like mood, mm-hmm. as an overall like aesthetic.
Sure.
Pick a SNES RPG off the pile. You're gonna have a better time than if you just pick like a random PS1 RPG
or really a PS2 RPG. I don't know. I played Tecmo Secret of the Stars. I don't know. I don't know that I'd agree with that.
Have you played Beyond the Beyond?
I've played Beyond the Beyond, and I've beaten Beyond the Beyond. I don't know what... Nah, I would still play Beyond the Beyond, because I still think that there's a little bit of pedigree there.
What leads into Golden Sun, right?
Yeah. Camelot. Yeah.
Well, I'd rather play a Super Nintendo RPG than Golden Sun.
Yeah. Like, I don't hate Golden Sun. It's just, it never made me feel much of anything.
I played 2 hours of Golden Sun, and I was just like, it's like a Super Nintendo RPG, except the script is 3 times bigger.
Yep.
This is great.
I like the puzzles. I think they do a good job with puzzles in those games. I think that's fun.
Maybe I'll check them out someday. Sure. Just don't love that it's like, all right, if you want the full story, you gotta play both.
Gotta play games. Both of them.
Yeah, fun. Yeah, that's what I want for my 16-bit RPG is 50 hours of is a 50-hour runtime. All right, I'm being saucy. I'm beating you around the bush here, which is that Breath of Fire is really mid.
Yeah. We were talking about it earlier, and I think that's the consensus we came to. It's just Capcom looking at the market and going, well, we got a Mega Man, we got some soccer games, do we have an RPG? Can somebody get Team B on an RPG? Just kind of like that. We need tell them to give us a Dragon Quest or something.
If somebody made Breath of Fire an RPG maker, I would be like, oh, good for you. And then I'd be like, what are you doing? What are you doing with your time? There's nothing here.
I will say I played this, you know, back in the day when it was new, and just remember nothing.
Because there isn't anything.
Yeah, like, you turn into a dragon, right?
Is that the dragon, and there's something. The fusion thing, which is cool, but it really doesn't have a lot. It's got some real awful dungeons. Oh my god.
Well, okay. I'll get to some of the later dungeons, and we'll see. Here's my touch. This is my mid touch point here. I played Suikoden Put Suikoden 2 aside. I feel like that game has enough like personality. It has enough of the creator's essence to it that I feel like you can get something out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Suikoden 1 is just like mediocre Konami RPG.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like there's nothing to that, right?
Yeah.
All right. I mean, I didn't mean to declare it. I mean, is that your experience?
No, I mean, that's how I feel about Suikoden 1 is like, all these years later, I still don't get why people are jizzing their pants over it, but God bless you.
Yeah. But the thing is with like Suikoden 1, the dungeons are like ramrod linear. It basically doesn't have a final dungeon.
Yeah.
It's easy. It's constantly easy the whole game. Mm-hmm. So like Breath of Fire having dungeons that have like memorable shapes, even if it's memorable, like,
even if it's only memorable because it annoyed me.
Annoying pit trap dungeon. Great.
Oh boy. Invisible maze dungeon. Great.
Oh, I'm hype. just get to the, at least like give me some cursed RPG maker maps for my trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that puts it ahead a little bit. It moves fast. There's a lot of enemy encounters, but the fights themselves are over quick, and you basically have free turn off random encounter items from the first town.
Mm-hmm.
So you only have to fight random encounters when you want to.
Yeah.
And because the game's pretty easy, especially after you get the dragon form, I'm just like zooming through a lot of the dungeons.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I'm like 2/3 through. I just hit the third world map theme, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But like, so the fact that it has dungeon shapes that stick in my head at all, that puts it a little bit over Suikoden. The fact that it seems like it's going to have like a climax is going to certainly put it over Suikoden. But it basically like the nicest things I'm saying here are just like, it functions. they play Dragon Quest II, they took good notes, and they did that without breaking it for the most part.
Yeah, okay.
And like that's more than a lot of games. I played Last Bible last year, and that game is nonsense. It's just like there's no dungeons. It's all grinding on the world map. Mm-hmm. That's the game. And then you grind enough to go beat the boss of the dungeon.
Yeah.
So this is better than that. It's functional.
Mm-hmm.
But God, I want more.
Yeah.
It's no Lunar.
It's no what? It's no Lunar.
No.
It's no Tales of Phantasia.
It's not even a Lufia 1.
Yeah. Yeah. My SNES RPG friends are like, oh yeah, you gotta play Seventh Saga. You gotta play Lufia 1. You gotta play Paladin's Quest.
Paladin's Quest. Like, oh my god.
And then they're like, Breath of Fire. You can miss that one.
are
the sequels?
Go ahead.
What platformers are the sequels on?
2 is SNES, 3 and 4 are PS1.
Yeah.
I have a lot of fond memories of 2, but I've never revisited it. And I think a lot of my fond memories of that game is because I literally spent a lot of time at my friend's house while he was playing it, and we just kind of played through it together. So I don't know if that game holds up or not. I remember having a really good time with it, but again, it could have just been the experience.
Yeah.
I know I love Breath of Fire 3, though. I love Breath of Fire 3, and I love Dragon Quarter.
Yeah.
Yes. I started 3. It wasn't the right time, but it had a very nice intro. But Breath of Fire 1 also has a very nice intro, and it didn't follow up on it at all. It's like, here's a tragic woman and a villain. And now tragic woman hasn't showed up for 20 hours. Villain just showed up like 15, 20 hours in, and the villain showed up again. It's like the game hasn't had villains.
Mm-hmm.
It's had like generic henchmen, but it hasn't had a villain until like just now, after so much game. It's just, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I'm not constitutionally built for this. I know there's, I keep watching folks that play like a million, like chrono gamers who play like a bunch of like every RPG in a row.
Yeah.
And I'm like, God, that's so fucking cool. You're playing all these weird random games. And it's just like,
That ain't me. Know. I'm built a little different. I'm not built for that.
I don't know how many mid Dragon Warrior 2 riffs I have in me.
There's like, God, Breath of Fire 1. It must be something in the water this month that's got everybody play. Because I know 4 people who
I picked it up because they were talking about it.
Yeah, I know 4 people who were talking about this game and 1 person that streamed through it. So it's just like, Where did this Breath of Fire 1, like, everybody needs to play this right the fuck now? Where did this come from?
I don't regret it. I mean, I've been wanting to check it out for years. I love Dragon Quarter. Boy, this is just, Dragon Quarter is just the opposite of this. Dragon Quarter is a hollow point sniper bullet. We have a precise vision, and we will bend the language of the genre around our vision and the story we want to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And then Breath of Fire is a game-shaped container that we have plugged off the shelf. And we are going to pour work into it until we have a finished product.
It's a cookie mold, basically.
And I don't like... I mean, when I see games on Steam like that, I'm like,
Everything that always says, like, is when they wear the homage on their shirt way too obviously.
Yeah.
It's like, just like when you don't even have to say inspired by Star Fox or whatever.
Yeah.
You're just making the thing.
It's the taking
the copy your nostalgia way too closely without adding any spin on it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think there's ways to do that in a fun way. Mm-hmm. Like I played a Dojin Mega Man riff
from
the 2000s. The Rosenkreutz Stiletto.
Rosenkreutz, yes.
Yeah, and I still feel like
even just making the characters in that different. Mm-hmm. It's enough of its own spin.
Yeah.
Like, some stuff is really fucking blatant.
The stuff in Rosenkreutz Stiletto that is unique to that game feels cool and special.
Yeah. It's like they started with the base idea.
Yeah.
You know, they probably started, like, just making a base-ass rote Mega Man game. And then somebody got excited. And we're like, but what if I make the enemies do this? What if I do a level design that's like this? That's the kind of homage that I like, is where you can tell somebody probably started with that base idea. Mm-hmm. And then they got excited when they started creating. And their brains started doing the thing where you make it your own. That's how a lot of my shit works. A lot of my shit starts as I like this thing. And then this was like, I'll start by just literally programming the thing. Mm-hmm. And then I'll be like, okay, but what if I want to make it do this?
Fuck yeah.
So it's just kind of like, I was playing like the game that I'm working on now. It literally started as me just trying to code asteroids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I was like, but I can do something different with this. That's the kind of inspiration that I like if you're going to copy something. Be me, basically, you fucking idiots.
I just finished playtesting a Ghosts and Goblins riff, and it's a fucking blast.
Oh my God, I know what you're talking about. It's real good.
So, like, imitation can be, like, a good starting point.
Mm-hmm.
I think the deal is when it just feels kind of it, like you said, ticking a box.
Yeah.
We need a Dragon Warrior on the shelves. Like, this is the, it's not a disaster. It's not bad. No. I'm compulsively playing Breath of Fire. Yeah. I am playing it and I want to be playing it right now. And I'm recording a podcast instead.
It is literally the frozen TV. It's the frozen TV dinner that's in your freezer that you don't really want to eat, but you're hungry. And it's just like, it'll get me through the rest of the evening.
I want to be playing it because it delivers on the basic RPG arc. And in one sense, like a lot of these box tick games, their real job is if a mom plucks us off the shelf and it's the kid, their kid's one new game for the next 3 months, is that kid going to be sad?
Mm.
And I think in Breath of Fire's case, the answer is probably no.
Yeah.
I think that kid is probably going to have a good time, maybe get stuck and start it over, maybe see it through to the end.
Make the numbers go up.
And it's going to get across like, oh, RPGs are cool.
Yeah.
And I think that's a win. It's just, I'm coming at it from a very different perspective. I think if you made a game that was just like this now, it would be really brutal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It would be really dry.
Yeah.
I think it's only that context of like, it was 1993, you know, so
Chrono Trigger doesn't exist yet.
Chrono Trigger, Phantasy Star 4 existed in 1993, and that game runs circles around my fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they also had practice. Like
they made three games before that. So
and two of them
have some arguable quality problems.
God, I was going to say two of them were good, but then I remember Phantasy Star 2 and I'm like, I don't know which one is the good one.
Two is fine. I like two. It's just three. I can't.
We all agree three is the bad one, but it's like, is one is the good one. Two is...
Two is all right.
When I actually got to like the first big story moment in Breath of Fire 1, like the first like act break where you make the robot, bring up the robot, and then it explodes and it's like, no, don't make the same mistake again. And I DM somebody like, it's like a Phantasy Star 2 was stupid. It's the same cadence of like the weird, abrupt story, dark story turn, but it's just stupid. It doesn't land at all. Phantasy Star 2 has heft and vision and voice to it. Mm-hmm. It's very taxing, and I don't recommend it unless you're up for like basically an 80s PC RPG experience.
Yeah.
But if you are, I think that's a strong thing.
Mm-hmm.
So. You know, they get there. Dragon Quarter is one of my favorite games ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. It sounds like three's a good time.
Three's real good. I still have a lot of fond memories of that game. I still have a lot of scenes I can think back to and just like, yep, I had such a blast with that game.
I'm just like, happened with four then?
Four is just kind of, when I played four, it was just kind of there. Like, it's like, yeah, this game looks amazing. They had their fucking Street Fighter team doing sprite work, okay? Ooh. So it looks freaking gorgeous. But in terms of the story and the characters and the like dungeons or the combat, it just nothing really grabbed me.
Yeah, play Grandia. We can play Grandia.
Grandia is so good. It's so charming.
Mm-hmm. It's just that there's just an, when everything is working, like it functions, there aren't like immediate things. Like there's things I can point to as being like kind of crappy in Breath of Fire.
Mm-hmm.
Like the gold bar quest.
Oh my
God. To get 65,000 gold to progress.
Oh my God.
There's some crappy parts, but like that's not really the problem here. The problem is like, There's a lack.
Yeah,
you've got the shape down. You're more adept than a lot of Dragon Quest imitators at the time. Mm-hmm. It's a better, if you're having to play one of these, this is a better time. But there's a lack.
Yeah,
and I'm interested in that the arc with the series where they go from where they figure out what makes them special.
Yeah,
basically.
I'm pretty sure that happens in two.
I think it probably happens in two. I have a friend who's just like, I dropped Breath of Fire 1 three times because it sucks. And then I finally forced my way through it and it still sucked. And then they really liked two.
That tracks. So, you know, that tracks.
We'll get there.
The funniest arc possible here is that you play 2 after this, thinking it's going to be like the Suikoden 2 you heard about in from people, and then you dislike it even more.
Well, that's the thing, is that I also really didn't like Suikoden 2.
No, that's what I mean, is that what people hyped it up is like the better, the good sequel.
No, I think I learned my lesson. I think I learned my lesson because I didn't do that with Star Ocean.
Right.
Star Ocean is the exact same thing. I played 1. It was kind of bad, and I didn't jump into 2, even though everyone says that's the better one.
Yeah.
So maybe I've grown. Maybe I'm getting there.
Good stuff.
Hey, Polly.
All right. So is that like... I didn't realize it before we sat down to start recording, but I guess my segment is kind of going to be a bit of like a post-apocalypse. So like, if you're into stuff where humanity and the world probably aren't going to make it on out to the other side of things, well, stick around. I got a couple bangers for you. Well, it's appropriate for the times we're living in that we just end an episode on, all post-apocalyptic. I guess first we'll go ahead and I'll drag us back to visual novel land. But we haven't been there in a while. We went there last time, actually.
I'm excited for this one.
So, yeah. I played what I believe is the latest in Key's line of sad robot girl kinetic visual novels, Stella of the End. I think the ones prior to that, because I know that there's Planetarian, I've not played the other one, Harmonia, because I know they've done 3 of these, because I did Harmonia after Planetarian, but I skipped Harmonia for some reason, don't know why. I guess just because Stella of the End just is immediately striking when I look at it, like I don't
it's
know
the leg.
Yeah, there
you leg.
Yes, there is, buddy. Yes.
Leg and then their art.
You're always going to get me. You're always going to give me. That's the easy way to my heart, really. Mm-hmm. It's all you got to do. So these games kind of basically tend to be stories set in worlds where humanity has mostly died out, where there's like a really small cast of characters that they can focus on. Sometimes it's just 2, which that's the case with Planetarian. And there's a focus on a cute android girl and developing some kind of relationship with her. So it shouldn't be all that shocking at all that this game is kind of exactly that again, but it's on a much bigger scale. Like this game, whereas Planetarian is like a nice snappy 2, 3, 4 hours, depending on how fast you read. This one took me about 11 hours. So it's a bit chunkier than your typical sad robot girl story. So Stella the End, protagonist this time around, is a grizzled courier. He's named Jude. He's a cool guy. He's kind of the predictable, stoic, grumbly, I'm doing this for the money kind of guy. You know, keeps his emotions several arm lengths away. And he's ended up accepting a mission from a client to deliver an unknown cargo to a space elevator that's about 90 or so days of foot travel away. Anybody want to take a guess? Want to put your noggin to use here? Does anybody want to guess what that cargo might be?
Is it a cute girl?
It's a cute girl. God damn it, John. Jesus.
Is she a robot?
She's a robot. Holy crap. How'd you? Goddamn.
Is she able to walk on her own?
She can walk on her own. She's got legs, Red. Come on. Come on. She's got real good legs. She's put them things to use.
I like my robot girls a little broken.
Yeah, I do too, really. I ain't gonna lie. I kind of really do like a good broken robot girl.
Who doesn't like that? Holy shit.
Who among us?
I stole John's brand right there. Acceptable.
So yeah, it's a cute android girl that he goes on to give the name Felia, which is a really cute name. And even she isn't sure why she's awakened, but she is 100% sure of the fact that she was created to become human. And that's her whole motivation. And Felia is, as you may also have predicted by this point, completely innocent to the ways of the world. So over the course of their journey through basically like the last vestiges of humanity. Like, Jude's client has also asked that he smarten her up on the ways of the world, kind of teach her about what it means to, you know, have some self-preservation, teach her, like, you know, basic human stuff. And this is all kind of stuff that this guy has kind of like gone out of his way to abandon in the world that he's living in, because there's just not a lot of hope in the world left. And that's kind of basically the driving force behind much of the game's dialogue. It's like, you know, stoic, rugged dude having to teach soft and innocent girl about the realities of an ugly world. But since she's so innocent to things, she doesn't see his pessimism as something that needs to be adhered to. Like, she doesn't get a lot of the, she doesn't understand why, you know, and she has a good bit of her own agency too. So she's not like just completely like empty headed. Like, she actually does have a surprising amount of agency in how persistent she is in one, wanting to become human, and two, just, you know, having this positivity and hope that is lacking in the world. You know, like, she doesn't understand, you know, why bad things are happening or why humans would be bad. And she's real bratty sometimes in some fun ways. Yes. I love it. Like, they don't overplay it, but like, she's got some bratty moments that are just really fun. Mm-hmm. And they kind of end up like, she kind of ends up getting the best of him in bratty mode, and he's like, god damn it. this story ends up being more of a road trip and like a tour through what's basically, you know, the end of humanity. There's a lot of like walking and talking. There's some real fun action scenes too, which that really wasn't a real part of Planetarian. But this game's got a lot of really cool big robot fights in it and some shootouts with, you know, remaining humans that have maybe kind of gone off the deep end. Some real good stuff. Surprisingly violent in ways that I was not expecting.
Excellent.
But it's a really cool adventure set in a really, really well-realized world. I think like the biggest vibes that I got from it, playing it the whole time, was very like Nier Automata mixed with Girl's Last Tour, with how the journey is paced out, because they count it out. You know, they give you a day counter after certain chapters, like, oh, it's been 12 days, and then, oh, we're here at this place now, like, what's this? And I think really what gets everything across is this game is gorgeous. The background artwork just does such a fantastic job of selling the world. You know, the character art is great. You know, what little of it there is, because it's mostly Jude and Felia. There are a couple other characters that show up here and there, but it's mostly, you know, just looking at really, really stunning looking backgrounds, and all the CGs are really, really, really amazing. And I think that's probably why I grabbed this game over Harmonia.
No, honestly, the art is so good.
It's so lush. It is such a gorgeous game. I think this story does a really good job of kind of balancing all the stuff that it's trying to do and say to, you know, it functions as a fun road trip story. It's a found family story. They've got all that in there. It's genuinely funny in the few moments that it tries for comedy. The action, like I said, really engaging, intense, and really does feel dangerous. And the philosophical, like, what it means to be human, pessimism versus hope stuff, all just kind of fit the story perfectly. Like, I had a lot of expectations coming into this, and the game still, like, swerved me really hard in ways that I was not expecting. So it's just like, if you're going in and thinking, oh, it's just Planetarian again, like, it has similarities, but it's not the same story, and it doesn't end up at the same place. And I don't think that it has many of the same themes or even the same messages, because I think that there's this game is looking very specifically at things like pessimism versus hope, and when like blind hope can become naivete and be really, really dangerous. And the legacy of like humanity itself, and like what that means and how that's preserved. I think that it just handles all this stuff so well. I have no complaints about this game at all. Like, it never felt like it hit a lull for me at any point in the story. Like, I actually, like, I started playing this game back in like September, And busy few months kind of happened there. And then when I, and I expected that when I'm going to have to probably start over, but no, like as soon as I pulled it back, like I was just immediately sucked back in.
Just right back in.
Yeah. It just felt right back home. Like I didn't have to like restart or revise it or, you know, revise anything or like that. I was just like, oh no. Yeah. Like they've done such a good job of making this world kind of stick in my brain that it was just easy to jump back in. Like I think Stella the End is just fantastic. I think it's a fantastic companion piece to Planetarian. So if you loved Planetarian, I've no reason to doubt that Stella of the End will hit just as good.
Cool.
Yeah. This one sounds so good, Polly. I've been meaning to play it for ages.
It really is.
Is this Romeo Tanaka?
I believe so, yeah.
I've been wanting to play one of his for ages.
I know
Cecile like loves Cross Channel.
Cross Channel. Yep. So pretty sure that this is Romeo Tanaka. So cool. Get on that, visual novel fans.
So is this about 10 hours long?
Yeah, it's about 10 hours long.
It's a good length for a VN.
Yeah, it really is. I would say give it a spin if you like Planetarian and the feels that gave you. And I think that it's very conducive to not having to sit down and binge it either, because each part of the journey feels like this little mini episode where you can just read it and be like, all right, I'll come back to this tomorrow. That's how I did it. I mean, obviously over the course, you know, that big break, but even when I came back to it.
Actually taking 90 days to read it.
But even when I like came back, you know, I came back, I was like, all right, you know, I read like a chapter or two a day, you know, just depending on when I read it. Like, all right, I read this on my lunch break because I had nothing else going on, or, you know, get home that night and be like, all right, let's before bed, just get another chapter in. So yeah, this is not one I think it lends itself well to just binging, but yeah, like taking in little bite-sized chunks and kind of letting yourself get pulled in and invested and really wanting to come back for that next sitting. That did a good job for me, so.
Cool.
Killer. Thanks for sharing that, Polly.
I'm always going to be there waving the flag for very good visual novels. You do not have to worry about that. Okay, so we'll move on to my last piece of content that we can talk about. How do we all feel about the movie Terminator 2?
I get
it's big very fan. Good.
Great, like it's great fucking movie.
Oh, fuck yeah.
So I mean, again, like Terminator 2 is also kind of like it's in that line of weird 80s and 90s movies where like the first movie is like this very specific, focused, sometimes genre defining thing.
Yes, I've rewatched Terminator 1 recently. I haven't rewatched 2 lately.
And then the second movie is like a big dumb blockbuster where you maybe lose a bit of the tone. Sometimes you miss the point entirely on those follow-ups. The biggest and most egregious that come to mind are like RoboCop and then RoboCop 2.
I thought you were going to say Alien and Aliens.
Alien and Aliens. Which
I will not hear slander for Aliens.
I am not saying Aliens is bad, and I am not saying Terminator 2 is bad. Okay, like that's not what I'm getting at. First Blood, and then First Blood Part 2.
Yeah,
where you just like First Blood Part 2 literally is just like we fucking aren't even gonna put on any kind of airs that we give a shit about the trauma story that we were telling in that first movie.
That series is so weird.
Oh my god,
the first one.
Yeah, like that, I love First Blood. Like that movie's fantastic, but I will. You could not make me watch any movie after it.
Yeah, I'm in the same. First Blood's amazing.
Yeah, it's fantastic. But despite all that, fucking Terminator 2 is one of my favorite movies of all time. Like
excellent.
It's probably it may be my favorite just balls out action movie ever. So it's kind of like perfect. It's a perfect movie to center a video game around, right? There were some shockingly awful attempts at it back in the 90s.
I mean, Ocean got the license, right? No, I'm thinking of RoboCop.
No, I think, was it Acclaim? Because I know that there was like Terminator 2, the arcade game, which people will say, I had a lot of fun with that. But you know, you just like and pointing. You
made earliest meme out of.
Yeah, oh my God. We were just flooding.
I still remember.
Yeah.
When you started talking about this game, I was like, is this a bit from 2001 brought back?
Yeah, God. We were memeing about Terminator 2, the arcade game back in the day for so. I don't even fucking know why.
So random.
It's you just really funny. Had a bug up your ass.
I had a bug up my ass. And Terminator 3 was on the way, which talk about completely missing the point. But Terminator 2D No Fate is not that game. Terminator 2D No Fate is... Oh my god, this game makes me giddy. This game is just like, man, you took one of my favorite action movies and you made a real fucking good action game out of it. Makes me happy. So it's the newest game from Bitmap Bureau, I think they are. I don't know if either of y'all played Xenocrisis.
Xenocrisis. No.
It's a top-down arena shooter, kind of in the vein of Robotron, Smash TV, and Total Carnage. It's really, really good.
Wait, the Bitmap Brothers? Is that what you said?
Is it Bitmap?
No, that's Bureau. That's like an Amiga.
Yeah, thing. Bitmap Brothers is Amiga.
Yeah, I was like, wait, what? These guys have been around a while.
So
I had something different.
So this game... It's mostly a run and gunner with, like, it's got some brief diversions into other genres and play styles. Feels immediately snappy in all the ways that I love a run and gunner to feel like it. I don't know what I can say here because it really is just like a great looking, very simple, fun run and gun action game that I had a fucking blast with.
A real run and gun.
Yeah, like, right? It's a good-ass run and gun. So, like, what do you expect? Mm-hmm. I think what I think deserves particular notice is just how dedicated to the movie and the lore this game is. Like, the guys that made this game fucking love Terminator 2. It is a note-for-note retelling of the movie's entire story with some added before and after stuff to kind of flesh it out a bit. It's a run and gun. It's a run and gun game where it makes sense to be. And then there's stuff like the motorcycle chase scene where you're doing a little turbo tunneling and you're like firing a shotgun backwards because that feels real fucking cool. You're just riding a motorcycle, firing a shotgun backwards at a semi truck that's trying to run you over. Nice. It's real good. And there's like, okay. And there's like a stealth level where Sarah Connor has to escape the mental hospital, and that's like literally like it's a momentary diversion. It's one stage. It's about 3 minutes long. It's very simple. It's not overly mean with the stealth. You don't even have to stay hidden if you don't want. And then,
that's good. I watched the trailer. I was like, what do you mean stealth? I don't want stealth in my running.
It works really well because she just like runs up behind dudes and just whacks them in the fucking back of the head.
That's good.
It feels real solid. It's got a lot of good impact to it. Trust me, it's a fun stage. Like when the T-800 time travels back to 94 and he's naked and needs to get clothes, so he goes and beats up an entire biker bar. So that's kind of like this big, clunky, not super great feeling beat him up, but it's also you're just trudging around real slow, like, you know, like he did in the movie. It feels good.
That's funny.
But that stage is also like where I understood the beauty and the love of what these guys are doing. It's like, you get it. Like, you go into the bar and like Guitars and Cadillacs by Dwight Yoakam is playing on the jukebox and it's just, that's insane. It's like, I never in my life thought I would hear a fucking country song in a retro video game. And then you go hit the fucking jukebox and Bad to the Bone starts playing. I don't know if you remember the specific shot in the movie where Arnold goes over to the bar, grabs a dude and throws him over the bar and onto the grill. And he kind of bounces around on it and rolls off. Mm-hmm. They fucking animate that with sprites.
This is crazy.
These guys just get it. And it's so infectious. Like, if you at all love Terminator 2 at all, you will get something out of this because it's just such a celebration of the movie and it just reveling like a pig in shit in it. And the whole game is just a lot of that. It's just a really fun and quick action game with this enormous love for the source material. I will say, that if you were at any way a seasoned run and gun player, you need to play this on Hasta La Vista your first time, because normal mode, like, there's no teeth at all. Like, everything is just enemies are so slow, they barely attack you. And then there's like an easy mode beyond that. But there's also like a couple of like they don't only just tell the story of the movie. Like, they also give you a couple like once you complete the game the first time, you can play it again. And like, there's the moment where they discover the chip in the T-800 brain, and he explains that, like, you know, it can be reset. You can actually reset it and change the story, and that gives you a different set of levels to end the game on. There are a couple of points like that, and then you unlock some other modes. There's like an arcade mode where it takes out the story, but the stages are in different order, and there's some slightly different layouts. And then there's a Mother of the Future mode where you play through the entire game as Sarah Connor. So it just, like, they just kind of threw everything in here that they could with, like, this just amazing love for the source material. Like, I'm all for these passion projects we've been seeing in the last few years, like TMNT Shredder's Revenge. Like, I know I said that that game's kind of long in the tooth, but I still really liked it. But where these people have this passion for this thing that they loved, and they want to make something really cool with it.
Yeah.
And that's what this game is. This game is just a little kid reveling in the fact that they're getting to make their really cool Terminator game that looks amazing, sounds amazing, plays amazing. I got no complaints at all for this game. Yeah. It's just a fucking banger.
This is so nice to hear. It's like the complete opposite of like 90s licensed games or like checking a box games.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like, no, like this game, there's nothing, there's no compromise here at all. Like, these guys really wanted to make the coolest shit they could, and then they did.
Terminator 2D, no compromise.
Yeah, baby.
Fuck yeah. I also just think it's cool that people are still making good running guns.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, like, we've had no shortage of those. Like, I've been very happy. I've still got a running gun sitting in my library that I haven't gotten to yet. That just came out at the end of last year. And a bag. Yeah, you go. It's my emergency bag of Doritos when I want to have a good time. But yeah.
So how much does this play like Contra?
I don't think that it 100% feels like, okay. No, yeah. I take that back, because the John Connor in the future segments actually do feel really Contra-y.
Okay.
Like, there's big boss fights. Like, the final boss is fucking nuts.
The final boss should just be the Contra 3, stage 3 boss.
The final boss is comparable. I will say that. I will say that, okay. Like, if you like the same, like, if that's your, you know, like, where you're at. Yeah, the last boss is really, really, really fucking good in this game. I had a great time with it.
Because Contra 3 was already kind of like,
here's a Terminator. We just made a Terminator in level 3, so sure. Yeah.
Very big one.
Yeah, yeah. Like, they do a really cool thing at the end. Like, again, like, it doesn't just end with the movie. Like, you still do the thing in the movie where, you know, you shoot the T-1000 and knock him into the fucking vat. They still have that.
For an action game, you don't want that to be
the that to be the climax. So, like, you go, like, and you finish the game out under the normal story mode as John Connor doing some stuff in the future to kind of, like, you know, give you that big catharsis. Yeah, it's really, really cool. So, yeah.
You go to space and fight the meat.
Iron Meat's also super good. Loved that game. The game that's on my list is Neon Inferno. That's like run and gun, but it's also got like a gallery shooter element to it, where you can you can hold a button and you can shoot into the background. So you're being assaulted from the left, right, but also the background. But it looks, I played the demo and it feels really good. Like, it's very responsive. Like, there's no, you know, it doesn't feel bad at all. Like, if you want to ever kind of give that a look. Also, that's another game. It's got all the art. Looks real gorgeous.
What was it called again?
Neon Inferno.
Inferno.
It's very cool. You can like stop time and like bash bullets back at enemies. It's so cool.
Oh, wow. That is very nice looking game. Holy
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, I cannot wait to get to this one at some point. Like, I'm keeping it in the back pocket. I almost wanted to dive into it right after finishing Terminator. But I was like, no, I don't know when the next we're going to get under one of these. So I want to hold this for when I really just kind of want it. Cool. So, yeah, like that's
I watched a Lord BBH stream. There's an Can expect that.
This fucking Steam page blasting the music always gets.
The Lord BBH, like there was I don't remember the game, but there was like an arcade gallery shooter slash run and gun thing. Mm-hmm. And it looks like, oh cool. Like I love people pulling from like more random traditions.
Yeah. Yeah. It's real cool.
Cool.
Good.
Yeah, if you make it like a Wild Arms, I'll be like, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, Wild Guns is really cool. I like that game a lot too.
Is Wild Arms the RPG?
Yeah, Wild Arms is the RPG. Wild Guns is the gallery shooter.
You know what I meant.
They did a really good updated version of that. Wild Guns Reloaded. It's so good. It's so good.
Mm-hmm. Too many games.
Too many games, man. That's a good problem to have. It's a good problem to have. So I guess with that, we are at the end of another episode. Are we all good?
Yeah.
Sounds like we're all good.
I feel like I was nastier than I normally want to be.
That's fine. It's
a weird month.
John is nasty as he wants to be. It's all fine.
More nasty than I want to be.
More nasty than you want to be. Well, where can folks find you if they, you know, want a little bit more of that nastiness?
No. All right. There's farawaytimes.com. All my blog and itch are linked there. You can also go to vextro.vextro.itch.io. Vextro Unplugged is linked there. And the last that's four successful annual anthology jams in a row now.
Nice.
They're all bangers.
Nice. Nasty, nasty John. Nasty, nasty John. Rhett, where can the internet folks don't find you?
Okay, so Polly, I have a bit of a problem here.
You do?
I'm not sure which social media to promote.
Because
I've got my Twitter, where all I do is post about Amane Kanata. And then I've got my Mastodon account, where all I do is post about Amane Kanata, but it's a little sadder.
Oh.
Yep.
And then I've got my B-Sky, where all I do is post about Amane Kanata. So you can go to find me at rhett.bsky.social.
Is that how you can? Can you? I don't think you can. That works. It's not the URL, but it's your at. Yeah.
That works.
Yep.
Find me at polyhead.bsky.social. I just usually just post dumb shit. I won't bum you out.
I mean, I'm on Blue Sky too. It's Faraway Types.
Yeah.
We're all blue skying.
We're all blue skying these days. We're doing a good job. We're doing a good job. This one's inevitably going to go to shit, too. So, you know, it's only a matter of time.
If only there was another way.
If only.
It's fine.
If only. All right, folks, that's going to do it. We will catch you back here in another few weeks. Thanks so much for listening, as always. And we hope you have a nice rest of your whatever. Wherever you are, we'll catch you next time. But until then, please remember, we are the podcast that loves you. We are the only ones that love you.